looking back, I was young enough to be naive to understand the pressure that was on me. At the same time, I had no obligations, no ties to anybody or anything. So I was pretty free to do whatever I needed to do and commit the time to doing this 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. I loved it.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. I started my first company when I was only 24, and I remember being laughed out of rooms because of my age. That's just what happens in some businesses or some industries. People just don't trust someone who doesn't look the part. But of course, outsiders can sometimes be the most insightful person in a room. They come with fresh vision. They're not thinking the way others do, and they just might have solutions nobody else has thought of. Jared Moses is proof of that. He went from being a college intern at Gray Advertising to becoming its youngest president ever. He was a 30-year-old boss of a major publicly traded company and regularly faced age discrimination because of it. But it didn't stop him. He went on to found the United Entertainment Group, a joint venture with Hollywood powerhouse United Talent Agency that would produce branded entertainment for General Mills, AT&T, Starbucks, and more of the world's largest brands, and worked closely with people like Mark Wahlberg, Queen Latifah, and Pharrell Williams. So it's fair to say people started to take this young guy seriously. And I wanted to know how he did it, how he found success so fast, despite so many people around him thinking he just wasn't up for the challenge. That's what we talked about when we sat down together. I sat down with Jared on a Friday afternoon earlier this summer out in East Hampton, New York. It was a beautiful summer day, and I got right to it by taking Jared back to when he was young, hungry, and had nowhere to go but up.
Yeah, it's one thing to be 30 as an age, but it's also another thing to look like you're 18 when you're 30.
You're right.
Which is a problem
right.
I've always had.
If you're 30, and yeah, because you look young. Right. And, if you were 30, but you look 45.
I think I was shaving every month at the time. I was lucky enough when I had come to Gray. I came to Gray literally while I was in college. I started working there before I even graduated. And I got to know management pretty well as just one of these aggressive interns. And I had the opportunity to work for, at the time, the three most senior people in the organization. One was Ed Meyer, the chairman, who was with the business, retired after 50 years of running Gray. So I was his intern. And another guy by the name of Steve Felsher, who was the CFO. And another guy, Steve Novak, who was the chief creative officer. So I functioned for all three of these gentlemen.
This is while you're interning.
While I'm interning. So I got to know them pretty well. And when I was ready to take on a full-time job, they put me in the media department first, which was the worst place to be in an ad agency in the 90s. It was the last person to present if they had time in a meeting. It was always creatives and account guys and the media guys.
Right.
But I got to learn a lot in the business. And at the time, the business was morphing from really a binary media buying business to what we started to look at as media arbitrage, when we would go in and invest in media platforms and then create content and resell them to our panel of advertisers inside the agency. So it gave me great exposure as far as creating ideas, and it became a real exciting business for the shop. And in 5 years, we went from zero to doing a couple $100 million in revenue for the agency. And I was in my mid-20s at the time. So it was exciting. We then moved the operation, this media arbitrage business, to Los Angeles. And I went there to open up the practice in Hollywood.
And how old are you at this time?
I was about 26 years old.
Okay.
And
but you already had, you came right out of school because interning, and
correct,
they hired you right off the bat.
That's right.
And you're 26 at this point, and they move you out to LA?
That's right. And at the time, the WB television network was starting. If you remember that show.
Of course, love
network,
the WB.
Right? Dawson's Creek.
Yeah.
And they had a challenge, which was, how do we produce programming, but at the same time market the shows? They didn't have a lot of budget for both sides of the house. So we started to develop these platforms of bringing brands in to help support the marketing budgets while at the same time integrating these brands into the shows.
And that was, as I remember at that time, kind of like people looked at it like, oh, you can't put brands in shows, and what's the cross between? It was really at its infancy, right?
It was. It was a church and state division for sure. And TV was able to do it first, right? Print started to come along a little later.
Yeah.
Publishers had an issue with that. But in television, the marketing teams and the sales teams and the production teams were very much tied in together. So we had leeway. to create some opportunity there. And we started to build these opportunities for the WB and for their shows to great success. And the shows were doing well. Revenue was coming in. The margins were 30-40% for the agency, which imagine those margins.
Jeez.
Right?
No wonder they loved you.
Right, exactly. Especially the day when media buying was at 1% and 2%,
that's
right?
That's crazy.
And Ed liked it a lot, and Steve liked it a lot. And so they started to elevate me and started to push this business model globally. So I started traveling the world, putting together this model of media arbitrage, brand integration, and representing brands in this world of content development.
That's got to be an amazing feat. I mean, you're 26 years old. It's like a dream for most people to be put within. Gray is the preeminent ad agency of the time. Here you are, 26 years old. They have you traveling the world. You're building this big business. What does that feel like?
It was, you know, looking back, I was young enough to be naive to understand the pressure that was on me. At the same time, I had no obligations, no ties to anybody or anything. So I was pretty free to do whatever I needed to do and commit the time to doing this 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. I loved it.
Yeah,
I loved
it. Bet.
It was incredibly exciting. Back then, they give you expense accounts to, you know, go and entertain and wine and dine and travel all over the place, which was great and fun for me. And I had never seen the world. The first time I ever flew out of the country was when I was 28 years old on business.
It's great.
So the furthest I ever got was the tip of Long Island. You know, so this was nice from a kid from Philadelphia to be able to get on a plane and by the way, coach, I had no problem with it and fly anywhere.
Coach was great. You're
coach
like,
great.
Hey, send me anywhere.
Absolutely.
I'll go to China.
Yeah.
Coach.
I mean, free Pepsi Cola on the plane. Right. So it was incredible. And we delivered the business, which was great as well. And so in a couple of years, we built this business into a business that was over $100 million in business for the agency. And so at that time, the team and the board of Gray, which was a large company, it was a publicly traded company, but it was privately controlled by Ed and his team, decided that it was the ripe time for me to start to take more of a leadership position inside the agency and bring this idea of alternative media investment and alternative marketing to clients.
So they saw the winds of change obviously coming. They saw your success. Now they're controlling the decision, but I assume now to put you in charge of this business, right? Was this the time? That had to be, that's a ballsy move. I mean, I hate to say that because knowing how good you are for the job and how you've, I mean, in hindsight now is obviously the right decision. But at the same time, there's so many easier ways to go get an older, senior, veteran person and put you under them. But what happens?
The business was new enough where there wasn't anyone out there that was doing it at the time. And so you were able to create your own path. And it was a very entrepreneurial company, even though it was so large. I think at the time I was there, it was 10,000 employees.
It's amazing.
Yeah, with 50 offices all around the globe. Yet it was still very entrepreneurial and very nimble in the way they moved. And so the competition out there against me, so to speak, was very small. Nobody else was really doing it at the time. And so I think they felt as though this is a no-lose situation. You know, we have this kid who's willing to go anywhere around the world to make it happen. If he fails, nobody will really know. It's a tree in the forest, right?
Right.
And if he succeeds, then let's scale this. So they gave me the long leash to either hang myself or run with, and it worked.
Yeah.
I think I was lucky. It was timing was perfect. The market was, if you remember back then, the market was moving to a direction of alternative media and more niche agencies being deployed by the brand teams.
Yeah, it was the very beginning that where they were looking for little niches and understanding that the old model of advertising they knew was, you know, was coming and you needed that. So interesting. So, you're in that spot at that point.
So I'm in the spot and we started to scale this business and we were scaling it at a rate that was growing 5x versus base advertising. And these guys said, let's put the team around you to start to build and scale. We'll allow you to lead, but you need to start to delegate and build a management team and more infrastructure to the business. So we started doing that.
And was there any hesitation on their part? Or you might not have known, but like, again, and I hate to say it, on the age kind of discrimination point, and especially when you're looking like 18 years old, but I guess you've been successful, but was there any hesitation?
There was, and it's funny you should ask that. There, to me, in person, I didn't feel it, although I remember seeing some memos being passed around with management at the time. And I think the word they used was immature. Do you think Jared's ready for this role? He's a bit immature.
Sure.
And I remember when I saw that memo, it got me really fired up.
Yeah.
And angry to the fact that they didn't see past the age issue. And it wasn't those guys that were writing these memos or other people around the agency. And they weren't understanding the business or the future of the business. Yeah. Now, that position could be my position and a naive position. I could have been absolutely wrong, and maybe I was, but I believed in myself. But the fact that other people didn't believe in the business, not me, but the business, got me fired up.
Right.
And so I just used that as energy to keep moving forward.
Channel it to a positive, make you strive harder.
Yeah. And then there were the client challenges as well.
Right. How was that? What was that like going? Do you remember specific instances where you're going in? And of course, at the time, I'm sure some of these clients too, it was a changing landscape. So there were kind of the older dinosaurs of the business who'd done business one way at the brands who maybe, you know, you had to convince them, and especially doing it at a young age, I'm sure that brought a little bit of headwinds for you.
Yeah, it was. I remember looking at the roster that I was going after. Back in the day, I was going after General Foods and Rice-A-Roni and Stovetop Stuffing, my key clients. But also Procter & Gamble was one of the largest clients I had at Gray. And so they had asked me to go inside of those organizations to start to mine opportunity. And what was interesting about the conglomerates were that they had such a tiered system, you know, a band system, they called it, between the entry-level folks that were mostly MBA graduates.
Right.
And then obviously the most senior executives. And my strategy was to start with the band one, you know, start with the folks that were a bit my age, maybe a little older, certainly more educated than I was, but understood that there were opportunity in the marketplace and that they were able to take a risk as well. And they were almost tasked to finding the opportunities out there. So I wouldn't go directly to CMO right away.
Right.
I would go to these brand managers and start to sell them in on the idea, bring them to Hollywood, bring them to the productions, bring them to the actual events that were taking place and have them feel that energy of the opportunity and then have them become almost my sales force inside the organization. That's right. And what's funny is that those people that I spoke with and met with today
they're probably running
are CMOs and CEOs of major organizations around the world.
And probably because they took those ideas and ran with it at the time and they were successful and they've gotten promoted. And it's so nice how it plays out now because those are probably a lot of your clients who, you know, you grew with and you really brought an industry, you know, into play.
That's
so
right.
Then this is the time you're around 30 years old.
That's
this? You're put in charge and you have these challenges, but obviously you're successful. And when do you realize like, wow, I'm at this point, there's big business. This isn't going away. This is the real deal. And does that play into your next steps of what you want to do?
Yeah. I mean, at that point in time, I remember very clearly the roster of clients we had, the revenue that we were bringing to the agency, the teams that I had located around the country and around the world working on the business. And there was a bit of a holy shit moment.
Right. Procter Gamble. And I mean, I just know how much money these guys spend hundreds of millions of dollars on marketing their products. And you probably, the roster you're saying, like General Foods, I mean, these were mega, mega companies really controlling advertising and marketing around the world.
That's right. And there were dozens and dozens and dozens of these companies. And at that time, I was definitely speaking directly with the CMOs of the organizations. And there was a lot of pressure on the business. And also the business was starting to move in a direction where the understanding of this concept was being adopted by a lot of other agencies and certainly other brands. And so the competition was becoming fierce.
Right. But you're looked at upon as a leader from doing this for the past 5 years.
You would hope so, right?
You
would hope so.
Yeah.
And so we just utilized that leverage as a catalyst to build more business. One, shop organically inside the teams that we were working with, but also to go and pitch new business and new ideas. And so the pressure definitely was starting to pile. And you never really understand how much pressure you have on you till you actually look out into the office space and see the mouths that you have to feed, multiplied by 2.5 because of the families that they, you know, that they are responsible for. And again, as a young kid with no responsibility still, I became even more aware of the importance of starting to build some infrastructure around me and start to think about what is the next move here? How do I actually take this business and scale it and really start to push in the direction that will create more of a sustainable business that can live beyond me? And that's what I started to think about at that time.
And how someone like yourself, obviously you're put into this, you're a kid from Philly.
Yeah.
You didn't go to business school.
No, I didn't.
You start, I love it because you're an intern. You intern, you get the job. They basically are promoting you. It's completely on your merit. But now you're at this point and it's like, whoa, I've got to build divisions. Do you ever doubt yourself or like, you know, hey, I see all these kids coming out, these MBAs. What are they learning there that maybe I don't know? Maybe I don't speak the language. But did you ever have those questions, and did the pressure get to you at that point?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if I would say if I doubted myself, but I certainly questioned the ability to keep this going, to keep this train going. And if in fact the business was going to completely implode, if there was going to be a major recession where spending was being taken a different direction, which we saw twice.
Sure, you know, yeah, since, two big ones.
Absolutely. You. Or if somebody, frankly, smarter than me was going to come in and create a whole new way to build the plane. And there's two ways to look at it. I'm very aware that, and have been, that I don't bring the same size deck of cards to a table versus the folks that are coming from the MBA side or folks, frankly, that have grown up inside these conglomerates. But I also look at that as an advantage where the development of ideas, which drives our business, as you well know, is critical. That's our commerce. And the idea of being out in the market and exposing myself to as much as possible in the world of sport and film and TV and live event and celebrity, to me, outweighs any kind of academic background. And as you know, I actually teach now at Columbia the MBA classes, and I think it's a wonderful thing, and it's a great experience and great to have as part of your quill, right? But the ability to be out there and experience these opportunities and then create ways in which they can become opportunities for brands is really the trick in trade.
Yeah. Do you have to remind, I mean, your students today that you're teaching, I would imagine, you know, the lesson, the great thing is it's like you're teaching but the lessons you've learned really were from going out and doing and communicating and learning. I assume you have to translate that to these kids, that it's not about studying and this is, you know, A to B to C, like you have to get out there. Have you found that?
Yeah.
These kids?
I do. And I remind them all the time. And as part of the curriculum, I take them to the opportunities and the events to see. But as you know, too, we live in a world of social experience, not live experience. But when they go and experience the live opportunities and events, it blows their mind. They can't imagine, wow, this thing is really real. And people are actually out there on stage performing. Like, music actually is made.
Phone.
You know? That's right. And so I try to remind them as much as possible that you have to get away from the screens in order to understand what is out there in the world of culture.
Right.
And how do you capitalize on that culture is by seeing it, hearing it, feeling it, meeting with people that actually develop it, and then figure out how you develop that platform versus just investigating it via social media. Both can live together, but I think more and more the cutting of cords has led to the belief that, sure, all things can come to me versus me going out and finding them.
Yeah, no, I totally agree and think that's where things are going, especially today in this experiential economy. And I think that's what's obviously what you guys do now today and with brand activations and experiential market. It's so relevant and paramount, even more so because we're in a social world. But take me now to the point in time where you say you leave Gray and you really go and start your own business. How did that come about?
Yeah. So Gray was sold in 2007 to WPP. I was part of that sale. So I had remained for a transitionary period for about 6 months to work with Martin Sorrell, almost a year probably, to figure out ways to transition the business, the entertainment business, and some of the other alternative marketing sides into WPP and some of the other companies that he was working with.
Were you thinking at that time, this is just going to be 6 months? Or were you at that point, did you have an idea?
I had an idea that it was probably time to really test myself out there in the market to see if some of these other ideas I had that I wasn't really given an opportunity to yet blossom within the existing structure, if I can make it happen. And so I thought it was time. And to be honest, it was an amicable situation between myself and Gray and WPP at the time. They were kind enough to allow me to work with some clients in part of the transitionary period.
Oh, that's great.
And the number one client I had when I first started the business, I was able to work with in the transition, which was CoverGirl at the time.
Ah, so that's great.
Which
so
is you, great.
You and were able to take them when you started your own place and it was all worked out between WPP and...
Yeah, it was fine. We worked on it together. And the client, as I go back to talk about the first brand manager that this same client was the person I still work with today.
That's awesome.
Who was the CoverGirl client who allowed me to work with her business when I transitioned. And we were doing a lot of work in the space with Queen Latifah and Drew Barrymore, Rihanna. It was a great piece of business that really showed the different aspects of what I was trying to do with my business and career.
And give us the actual business and how you started. Take me back. Like, what was that like, that walking away, I mean, from Gray at the time and now WPP, which is the biggest of the big, like, you walk out the door, and what do you do? Like, how do you like set up shop or what?
So it was 2007 at the time.
Perfect timing.
Yeah, huh, perfect. Yeah, except, well, that's, yeah, and I remembered vividly.
Oh God,
vividly. And I just had my second kid.
Oh, geez.
I just bought an apartment.
Yeah.
So why not do something different and have no money in my pocket, right? And again, you know, for some reason, I wasn't aware of the detriments of trying to do something like this. And I think that was helpful. And as you can appreciate, you become more and more aware as you get a little bit older and your family starts to grow. And at this time, there are babies. They have no idea, you know, what's going on. So why not try something new and different? And
it's really amazing, like you say, like at this stage, because I'm similar stage. And two kids and they're getting older now and myself leaving the last business now and going to start something in the fall, it's a much different feel than, you know, when the kids are really young and you don't even have kids as to going out now. And I fight myself every day, even having had some success with businesses, I fight myself to like say, I'm going to go do this. I'm not taking any safe route. Like if you want something, you want something good, you got to take some risk. And it's great when you don't really feel it. But as we get older and you kind of have responsibilities and things you have to take care of. But for you, so at this time, you've got the young kids, you buy a new apartment, where so you're not, obviously, you're not in that mindset of like, oh my God, what am I doing?
Right, right. I think, you know, part of this is, not to go too far back, but, you know, I didn't grow up with much. And as you well know, my father passed away when I was 12. Yeah. My mother was, and still is, an actress. And we didn't realize, you know, how good or bad we might have had it.
Yeah.
And I think that now, and I still carry the belief that, you know, you can do whatever you need to do to make ends meet.
Right.
Right.
Like, you know, you'll survive.
Absolutely.
Okay. You'll be able to, whatever it might be. I remember always myself, like, I'll just go back and get a job somewhere and bust my butt.
You always can, right?
It was a fallback.
That's right. And so I think that I still believe that.
Yeah.
And default.
It's amazing to me, like, how that's, I love it because, like, that's still your mindset. Like, after all this mega success, you're thinking, okay, I have some fallback. Like, I'm sure I'll get this little job and I'll, but like, you don't even realize, like, it's great because it's still ingrained in you, probably from growing up and losing your dad and growing up with not having much. Like, it's okay.
Yeah, it really is. And happiness is interpreted many ways, right? And I was fortunate enough that the love and support that my mother gave the family, which remains today, really is all that really mattered, right?
And that was what brought you,
absolutely,
at the end of the day,
the
happiness. Yeah.
And so today, you're right. I believe that worst case scenario, I'll figure it out, right? I mean, bartending ain't such a bad gig,
right? You know what? Maybe, and then when you come with that and you realize those things, and as you get older, it's like, what's going to really bring you happiness and your family happiness? But it's always just funny for me to see other people who still have that kind of like that insecurity or scariness of like, oh my God, I might lose this, but I'll be able to survive.
That's right. I think it's important. And I think your kids learn from that as well. Right.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I'd much rather have my kids see me as a risk taker and let them grow up with that mindset versus living a life of just security and no risk at all. Yeah. I think it's important for our kids to understand
that. Did your parents always get, did your mom and dad, well, I know you were young, but did they instill that belief in you that you could do anything you want?
I think so. Yeah,
to go after what you want?
Yeah, I think so. It was certainly not a second place trophy mentality, which was like, everything's going to be okay. It's okay if you lose.
Right. You're from Philly.
That's
Philly, not the way.
That, no, absolutely not. It's, you know, if you come in second, you lose.
Yeah, exactly.
Second is last.
Even first, they'll boo you.
That's right. How did you win first?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, no, I think it was more of a confidence in that everyone has an ability and you got to figure out what your ability is. And if you can figure it out, money will come along.
Right.
And I remember that lesson from when I was very young.
Such a truth.
Right? Which is just figure out what you like to do, be happy doing it, and money will come along. And I still believe that today.
Yeah.
And there's no sense in... And I talk to my teams even today and saying there's no sense to be doing what you're doing if you're not happy doing it.
Absolutely.
It's just not
gonna
produce.
Look, you followed, I mean, who doesn't want to be working in entertainment and sports? And like, it's very easy to go into other businesses and you look at them like finance or whatever it might be and make money. But very seldom do I find any friends who do that who are really happy and enjoying their life. It's more the people who find a passion, whether that is something like sports or entertainment or it's a cause or whatever it might be, who I think you find those people are the happiest.
That's right.
More from our guest But first, a word from our sponsors. Payroll and benefits are hard, especially for small businesses. You don't have the time to be an expert in things like taxes and regulations. And old school payroll providers just aren't built for the way you work today. Gusto is making payroll, benefits, and HR easy for small businesses. Modern technology does the heavy lifting, so it's easy to get things right. And why is Gusto better than the other guys? Well, PC Mag and Fit Small Business have called Gusto the best payroll for small businesses. Gusto also makes payroll a breeze. In fact, 9 out of 10 users say Gusto is easier to use than other payroll solutions. Gusto saves you time. 72% of customers spend less than 5 minutes to run payroll. Don't believe it? Just Google them. People love Gusto. How often do you actually love your payroll provider? That is true. So, most small businesses don't have an HR expert, but you don't need one to use Gusto. With great software and great service, you can focus on your business, not payroll and paperwork. And you no longer have to be a big company to get great technology, great benefits, and great services for your team. So, to help support the show, Gusto is offering our listeners an exclusive, limited-time deal. Sign up today, and you'll get 3 months free once you run your first payroll. Just go to gusto.com/HSH. And our next sponsor. I'm usually not open to trying new types of dress shirts, especially ones with many colors or a little different from my normal look. But my wife, she's the stylist in our family, and she ends up buying me new shirts. I usually hesitate, of course, to wear them, but then I wear them, I start getting compliments, and I want more. Well, the same thing happened when I tried on Paul Frederick shirts. They had interesting colors and really cool patterns that totally elevated my wardrobe. Paul Frederick has been making dress shirts for over 30 years, and those shirts are pretty darn good. The Paul Frederick shirts I have feel good, they're comfortable. I even tried a purple shirt on for the first time, and you know what? Adding some color to my look lifted my spirits, and people noticed. And of course, people noticed my shirt as I got compliments on it when I walked down the street. So of course, I went back to Paul Frederick and bought more shirts. And now you can get $50 off any shirt from Paul Frederick just by visiting paulfrederick.com/HSH. Again, that's paulfrederick.com/HSH. And we're back. Okay, yeah. So let's go back to that
time
you walk
of,
out that, the door.
Yeah, I walk out the door. And I remember, so I had talked to you about the WB days of working in Felicity and Seventh Heaven, all those shows. There was a guy that I was working with at UTA, United Talent Agency, this guy, Peter Benedek,
okay,
who's an incredible guy. And he was involved with the creation of Law and Order, The Sopranos.
Sure.
He represents Michael J. Fox. He's a bit of the godfather of the talent agency business. And I had worked with him a bit on some deals when I was at Gray, and I had this idea of creating this culture-led media partnership agency. And it had to start in Hollywood. And I was in New York at the time. I had moved back after a few years in LA building the business for Gray. And I called Peter and I said, I have this business plan. I want to come out and talk with you about it. What do you think? And so I went out there and we spoke about the idea, and I had already started to build the business and I was starting to work on it already. And he's like, this is great. Why don't you meet with my board and we'll go through it. You can imagine the board of a talent agency is very different than a board of an ad agency.
Only knowing from selling my business to CAA,
you know,
and
well,
being there and
you know, well,
understanding what cast of characters you're
absolutely
dealing with.
Absolutely. It was fantastic.
I gotta love it.
It was fantastic. So I sat around this group of five people and I went through the idea of the business plan, a couple hours talking through it. Then at the end, everyone's nodding and I'm walking out the door and we're shaking hands. And one of the most senior guys on the board is following me out. He goes, Jared, real quick. I said, yeah. He goes, will you explain to me that one more time? How do we make money?
Right.
And so I took a cocktail napkin and drew it out for him. He goes, okay, I get it. Let's do it.
I like it. And, yeah, let's just
and,
do it.
Yeah, just do it. Let's just do it. And, you know, it's funny. So I had then said, great. And I literally bought the figurative card table and set up the business
Amazing.
With myself in my apartment. And,
in your apartment.
In my apartment.
Out of New York City.
Out of New York City.
Okay.
And it was, we had a dining room, kitchen, living room combination.
I love it.
Put the table right in the middle. It just started.
And you have the kids at this
had
time?
Had the kids.
Oh,
yeah. One of the kids that
are
right there. I think was starting kindergarten at the time. So
okay.
Yeah, it was people run. And I just started just banging away at this business. So after about a few months, Peter comes to town and says, hey, Jared, you know, we should have some office space. And of course, he takes me to like Billionaire's Row, 57th Street. Right. I was like, Peter, you know, we should really,
agency.
We should go to Lower East Side. We should really go. He goes, no, this is the way we should do it. And so literally, I think my desk cost $20,000.
That's amazing.
It was crazy. And he was right in the sense that we had to build it and they will come.
And it's true. And when you look at that as what I think talent agencies and the CAAs and the WMEs and the UTAs of the world have done is like you're dealing on the highest levels. There's a perception that you have to be and act a certain way or someone else is going to come along and take your client. And if they don't think you're dealing at the highest level,
that's right.
And it works. You know, it certainly works when you've seen some of these offices. But so you go and you pop up shop on 57th Street.
That's right.
And the business itself with you, is it just you? How does it start to grow?
Yeah. So the magic of the business at the time was that the agency had represented a bunch of different talent and the talent was looking to develop brands on their own.
Right.
Right? So at the time, I remember we had Bob Harper from The Biggest Loser that was looking to develop a health and fitness line. We had Dwayne Johnson back then who was looking to develop a children's business. We had a number, Mark, who was the other one that we had?
Mark Wahlberg?
No, that came later. We had probably about five or six different main clients that were looking to develop businesses in which they needed to have brands as their partners. And so I became that conduit. I was able to bring the pieces together and build these platforms for the talent, at the same time bring opportunities to the brand. So that was one side of the business that came rather quickly.
Especially at that time, I remember like this was the beginning of that. And then of course there's, you know, now it's, I mean, everyone wants to be the next George Clooney with Casamigos and, you know, these big brands or partnerships. And we've seen what talent can do for brands. So that's one side of the business.
That's right.
That you're working with UTA clients and helping them create platforms for their businesses.
Right.
What's the other?
The other side of the house was working with the brands and continuing the conversation and the model of building these cultural platforms, these content-based platforms, even brand extensions with brands to really get further into that zeitgeist of consumer passion and relevance. And I had started with P&G.
Right.
And so that was a great business to start.
Noticed they've, you know, it's interesting. I didn't realize you guys are behind it. You've been behind them for so long. But I always thought they did a great job at becoming relevant within the entertainment and sports space and different celebrities or different. It seemed like they were ahead of
The game. They, and you know, the same teams have really been there doing it since, you know, the 90s. And they were ahead of it, they were taking risks. And they were smart about the way they were investing their money and also the way they were leveraging their investments. And so we started doing more and more brand work. And the team I started to recruit into the business were people from the brand world.
Interesting.
Right? So we were bringing in brand managers. We were bringing in marketeers that came from either brand or the media side. And that was the one side of the business. And the other side, we started bringing in more entertainment executives, label executives, managers. At one point, we had a gentleman who was Rihanna's manager, found Rihanna, who was my partner.
Wow.
Was with me for 10 years.
Who's that?
Mark Jordan.
Okay, yeah.
And Mark found her in Barbados and we did her first deal with Escada Fragrance, I think was the time, and Secret Deodorant.
Incredible.
And these deals were like $10,000 deals and they were mall tours, but they were deals that we would be able to leverage and promote as an agency. And so that really started to create more opportunity for us because people started to hear about the work that we were doing. And still it was a nascent business. And we started to build the business together with UTA and myself and to the point where we had about 80 people within the organization in
How
New York
long did
and LA.
It take to
that was about,
like that?
About a 4-year run.
And how is that for you coming in? This is, they basically were like, Jared, go run with this. This is you. I mean, literally, you're in your apartment at first. How is that for you coming from this world where you built a business really with, you built a business and you were in charge of that business. So you've grown that. But how is that for you of growing this business at that time where really it's like, one employee at a time. Like, do you remember kind of some of the things you went through and the feelings? And was it always just a straight success or were there ups and downs?
There were certainly ups and downs. We had blinders on. You know, we had a mission to create a company that really was top line, relevant, not bottom line relevant at the time. Again, the talent agency model was let's build as much mass and market share as possible. We'll manage the back office at some point, right. But let's really grab as much business as we can and really build a strong foundation. That was great. And it was actually an excellent direction to go in and something that I would certainly recommend even to today, which is for new businesses, focus on the top line and make sure you have partners that are willing to go that extra yard and have a less sensitive point of view on burn rate,
right.
At least in the beginning.
To get some scale.
Absolutely. Build up and get
your name out there.
For sure.
You need to.
And that's what we did. And for those few years, it was all about building, capitalizing on growth. And, you know, we went from zero to probably about $30, $40 million in 4 years.
Wow.
And then we started to manage that bottom line. But it was about bringing in the right people, in some cases overpaying for the people just so you'd have them on your side, investing in the business alongside the clients so that you weren't necessarily caring too much about making the profit. You wanted to do great work.
Sure, because at the end of the day, you know, you're a talent agency and part of that, or UTA was, part of that is you got to take care of these clients. And this was the perfect way to take care of those clients and get into further business with them.
That's right.
And drive more money for your clients.
Absolutely right. And you would have to do that in order to, one, make sure that you're creating at least some barriers of entry for the competition. Two, the work that you were developing and producing was excellent work.
Right.
And it's hard to look around the corner sometimes in a business that's so nascent that you're not really sure which way culture is going to move.
Yeah.
And when it does move a certain direction, you're not going to go back to the client to ask for money.
Right,
you're
exactly.
Take it out of your own pocket.
Exactly.
And so it wound up being a pretty successful business that grew pretty quickly, but then we knew we had to scale. And so we started to think about what are those opportunities to scale.
And what year is this, four years in?
Yeah, about 4 to 5 years in, we started to realize it was important to now scale the business on a global level, convert the business from not just retainer business, which is a great business, but to also equity-based positioning in our business. So we'd have some residual annuities inside the business. And then also to look at a fund that we could start to develop our own IP out of as well.
And would the fund be, tell me about that, is that to invest in your own businesses or other businesses?
It's that. Yeah. It's also to develop in more IP tools like analytics and data to invest alongside some work that you're doing for clients. Sometimes it's to take some risk and invest some properties that might become platforms that you can then monetize, going back to the media arbitrage model. But those are risky. But to have that slush fund that you're able to do things on a bit of a turn of a dime if you can. And so this was about 5 years in, we started to look around a bit and we took our time and we had some starts and stops with some opportunities more on a global level than a domestic level. We looked at Asia, looked at Western Europe, about to create some partnerships with us or to acquire some firms. But the real opportunity came in 2014, mm-hmm. when, funny enough, back to the days of the gray days, one of my mentors was on the board of Edelman, and he introduced me to Richard Edelman.
Okay.
And that's when the whole kind of next chapter started to begin for UEG.
Tell me about that.
So the Edelman business, as you know, is a huge business.
I mean, they have been, for me, not being directly in that part of the business, public relations, but knowing the Edelman brand, I mean, they were it in PR, kind of the biggest and the best.
Yeah, it's it. And, you know, they still are. They're a pretty powerful agency, independent, family owned. Richard Edelman is second generation. His father started the business and he was looking for an entertainment offering inside of the overall public relations offering. And he at the time had an agency inside called Matter. I'm not sure if you know Matter. But Matter was more of his sports marketing shop.
Okay.
And live event experience shop.
Interesting. I never knew that. I knew they did a lot in that space, but I didn't even know they had a branch.
They had an internal brand. And so one of the board members, Steve Felsher, and I were together in the Hamptons. And he had mentioned to me that Richard was looking for an agency and would this be something that was interesting to you? And I said, yeah, this would be interesting to me and the guys over at UTA. And I remember it was July 3rd.
Yeah.
Oh, and I get a phone call and I'm in Montauk.
Like, I really don't want to work this weekend. Can't you call in a couple days?
It was really what the beginning to what was to come. It was the 3rd at like 4 or 5 o'clock.
What timing?
And I was in Montauk and Steve said, hey, you know, Richard's available for breakfast. Do you want to come in the morning? I said, sure, I'm happy to. And literally, I got in the car at 5 o'clock. In the morning.
From Montauk, which for our listeners is like the furthest point from New York City on Long Island.
Literally.
And like traffic on July 4th weekend, I can only imagine.
Exactly, right? And I drove. And I remember the it was, I think Google Maps at the time told me it was about a 5.5 hour drive. And I was like, I don't know if I can even make it on time. But we made it on time, and we sat for a couple of hours, and it was a real straight shooter conversation. Like, you know, how do you feel about this business? How do you feel about having scale to your business? How do you feel about an organization like ours being part of your business? And it was all upside. And the most important part was the person that you're going to work for it
with,
right?
Right. And did you know right off the bat, or obviously looking at that and thinking about it? I mean, the person you're going to be working with that's so much of these mergers or acquisitions. And did you have a good feeling right away?
Right away. If you look at the history of Ed Meier and then Peter Benedek and now with Richard, I've been quite lucky.
Yeah.
And, you know, the horses that I've been running with have been incredibly, not just supportive, but have helped a lot with my growth and direction.
Well, they were smart. I mean, the way I look at it is, they saw you as this really great person who could lead businesses and build them, and they gave you that opportunity starting at a young age, which I think to me, when you look at people who are acquiring business or building them, if they're able to see that and let you actually do it, then they're really smart people. And it sounds like for you and for the people you've approached, they've said, hey, go for it, and you've been successful.
Well, yeah, I think that's right in that they were secure enough in knowing that they had an incredible business, and to round it off or take a risk with this guy, you know, why not? And yeah, I think that there was also a sense I think they had in me that I put a tremendous amount of pressure on myself to succeed. Right. And I did not want to disappoint them.
Yeah.
And luckily, in every step I've taken, we've been successful in our venture.
Sure.
And again, thankful and incredibly knowledgeable about how lucky I've been in that path.
Yeah.
I think, you know, part of it's timing. Part of it certainly is, as they say, you know, it's 99% sweat in the business.
Yeah.
But yeah, also that they're willing to take risk
and
put their business behind the concept that I had.
And the part of you that drives you, because, you know, many people, they achieve a certain amount of success and they just want to go play golf every day. What is it internally? Like you said, you put more pressure on yourself than anyone's ever going to put on you. And of course, I believe for me, I'm similar where it's just, that's what drives me. Anyone else, anything else? Like, why is that? What is it, do you think, that's driving you? Not to get too deep.
I appreciate the question.
For an entrepreneur, it's really important.
I'm sure you have your own internal answer on that as well. You know, I think a lot of it is, certainly a lot of it's in bed. You know, I think that it's the way I'm built. I remember being really young and being more interested in the stories behind successful business people and athletes than the actual daily news that I would receive from these individuals, right?
Right, right.
I was more interested in the business of brand Jordan than how many points Michael scored on the court.
Right.
And I've always enjoyed that. So I do believe a lot of it's inborn in me. Also, I think that if I was going to be a bit self-analytical, some of it's proving myself out a little bit, that I've had my challenges, not just that I put on myself, but that if people have given to me in school and in business and doubters. And I think, as I said to you before, that has fueled me a lot. And not in a way that I take it in and like, I'm going to go beat them.
No, this negative.
It's more of a positive energy and proactivity in, hey, I think I could really do this. And so I think I like to put challenges on myself continuously. And once you hit a certain level, I don't want to plateau. Yeah. I want to, okay, what's next?
What can I learn? How can I grow?
Yeah. And I think that's part in the mentors that I've had. It's part what I've admired and respected in the industry that I've just put on myself. And I'm more motivated about business than I am about seeing different parts of the world on vacation.
Yeah.
You know, I have really no interest in that. We're sitting here in the summer and people are asking me, hey, you want to go on this vacation? I have no interest in that. I'd rather be sitting here with you and talking business.
You enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what drives me.
Yeah. No, I love that. Yeah. So tell me about the business today. Where is it at? Where are you guys going? I mean, there's so much you have built, and I've followed you over the years and always admired just what you've been able to do, especially this has been experiential, my space, and really making something work. And it just seems like you keep growing and growing. And where is the business today?
So, well, I appreciate you saying that. And the business has become larger than I thought it would be. We're now in a 9-figure business.
Wow.
We have over 300 people on our business working throughout the world. It's allowed me to see other aspects of the world I never saw before,
that's how you can travel.
Which is fun, right? Exactly, which I really enjoy.
Right.
We have a roster of clients on the brand side that exceed 350 different brand clients around the world.
Who are some of your big clients?
Unilever is a big client of ours, Starbucks, PepsiCo.
Major players.
SC Johnson, yeah, some of the major conglomerates. And then we have fun startups, you know, like Rumble Boxing.
Yeah.
And, Away
I love
Luggage.
Rumble.
Yeah,
Rumble's great. I go there all the time. Yeah,
I wish I did.
I mean,
you look like you go.
I'm not a cardio guy. Yeah,
I can't
yeah.
do it.
Yeah, it's
I
hard.
Can't do it.
It's hard.
It's great. It's great. And our disciplines range now. We have, you know, sports, we have entertainment, we have lifestyle in our sector approach. And on a practice approach, we have a licensing division, which is a great business,
yeah.
live event experiences. We have content production and development, long form and short form. We have social and influencer and analytical
sure.
tools, the full-fledged toolbox
yep.
of what we need to create culture. And so if you think about our business, when we first started as a marketing agency, I look at that world as quite binary,
yeah.
right? You have to really build culture. And I know people utilize that and overutilize that word a lot in
yeah.
our business. I mean, you live in it, right?
Yeah.
You've developed many businesses in it, but I think it's important to be ahead of it and to create culture, but tied into pieces that are popping within the industry and within the footprint of sports, entertainment, and lifestyle. And so for us, you know, we just finished building the Taco Bell Hotel.
I didn't know that was you guys.
That was us.
That got so much play.
Yeah, it was really exciting.
Are they going to go? People were like, they've got to go into the, you know, hotel business now. But
we would love that. It was an incredible experience and a really successful campaign
yeah.
for them. And, you know, we're currently having discussions about what's next. But, you know, that's a perfect way that we've built, you know, with our clients,
yeah.
a cultural moment that resonates with consumers and beyond.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what's next for us, I think, is about creating those cultural moments, owning those cultural moments, investing more in that IP ourselves. The development of brands that push culture are derived from
sure.
The need in that zeitgeist of both celebrity and consumer. And then also being an incredible marketing agency for brands that are able to propel their plans forward so they're able to gain market share and create more resonance and loyalty with their consumer base.
Who are some of your favorite celebrities that you work with who really understand business?
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's so many celebrities now getting involved and want to own businesses, and some of them are fantastic. I know others, you know, there are a lot of creatives, and
yep.
it's kind of right side, left side of the brain. So sometimes it's hard to put it all together. But who are some of the, I guess, celebrities you've worked with who really sure. are brand builders and understand business?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. As you said, there are a lot that aspire to be brand moguls,
yeah.
But don't really have the wherewithal to go for it. And frankly, don't have that believability factor
yeah.
from the consumer.
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
Authenticity is
exactly.
the paramount nowadays.
For sure. You know, one that's been working with me for a long time is Queen Latifah.
Yeah,
you know, I have to mention her. She's an incredible person, a great visionary, a great team around her. As you know, she's built cosmetic companies. She's an apparel company.
Yeah.
She has a production company. And so she's one that I always love working with and really enjoy her vision and camaraderie and loyalty. And we're continuing to work to this day on lots of different ideas
yeah.
together. Drew Barrymore is
yeah.
somebody that I highly respect. I've had the pleasure of working with. Her flower business has completely
yeah.
taken off. Just the other day, she announced her kids line of products with Walmart. That's somebody that has really parlayed her Hollywood and celebrity status
yeah.
into really doing good
yeah.
and providing a product for people that's affordable, but also aspirational. Rihanna is somebody who we've seen grow, you know, over the
incredible
last...
Incredible from mall tours, right?
Right, to, from mall tours for Secret Deodorant.
And that's what I think... Sometimes at that level and when you're starting out in celebrities, it's like the willingness to go do that and build your brand, build your business. It's imperative for success later on.
That's right. That's right. And she knows who she is. And she is a force, a total force of nature, and is able to really build an incredible company around her. And that will far outlive her music career. And
yeah.
I think that's the goal for a lot of these celebrities is, you know, what do I do next?
Exactly.
And then what will sustain me after I don't have not the ability, but the wherewithal to really continue to tour 300
yeah.
days a year and that kind of thing.
And how about for you in just... in the little amount of time we have left,
sure.
what for you, what next? And not saying, hey, but as you build your career and having so much success at an early age, sometimes I could imagine it's like, you know, and especially someone like yourself who really pushes themselves, but where do you envision yourself? Because you definitely aren't the guy who I could see like retiring and doing, like they're going to have to peel you off the desk.
That's right. Well, you too.
What do you think for next steps? And is it just as the business has evolved, creating new businesses?
Yeah, I think for me, It's about continuing to diversify the business and the platform that I currently live on, right? I think United Entertainment Group stands for a lot more than it is today. It certainly stands for more today than it was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But I see us being more in the business, developing these platforms that we have ownership in, that we're starting to dabble in, but to do more of that, to really be a company that owns some brands that live in culture, that's one. I think two is to continue to develop really smart and forward-thinking and future-proof marketing programs for our brands that really integrate all the polymedia that you see in the industry out there that really hasn't been discovered yet. We're talking about AI and other ways that we could think about developing brand concepting. I like to do more there. And then also, you know, in the world of storytelling, I think for us to be able to continue to create content that is both consumable based upon just people's interest in seeing and hearing and feeling that content as a consumer to enjoy it is one thing that we'd like to do. And then also on a parallel path, figure out ways to monetize it. And, you know, we're already starting to work with the Netflixes and the Hulus and the Amazons of the world and figure out models in which we can develop this content that is both consumable but also monetizable.
Right.
I think that's a big opportunity for us as well.
Yeah. Well, I have no doubt in a few years, I don't know what other position you can get into to achieve more, but I'm sure you're going to be building some empires for clients, celebrities, or celebrity clients, and I have no doubt that you'll continue to be successful.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks,
Thank
Jared.
You. Thank you.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com. Or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.